record.
All right.
Okay, squiggles are squiggling. Bionics are on. All right, hello, and welcome to Stasis Pod, the Bionic 6 podcast. I'm Rob 1.
I'm Jen 1.
Welcome back to the Osamu Dezaki Show. I'm David 1.
Yay!
And yes, we are between seasons, which means we are delving back into the weirdness of past animation. And in that case, as a tribute to the late, great Ron Friedman, writer of Transformers the movie and creator of this TV show, we are watching Bionic 6.
Which takes some work these days, apparently.
Yeah, whoever owns this has really scrubbed it from the internet.
A few more steps than usual, but not really. Yeah, because for a while it was on, like so many other things, just all over YouTube. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, we still have archive of things to look at.
Yay! But yeah, the Internet Archive is once again doing the Lord's work here.
Yeah, the quality ain't great, but it's good enough.
Yeah. It's watchable, but yeah, it's kind of painful.
But yes. Yeah, it's not like having to go to Daily Motion where it's flipped and twisted at an angle and
sped up slightly.
The audio quality is way off. Yeah.
And so, had you guys ever seen this before before watching this?
Yeah, I grew up with it.
Okay.
Well, basically, when did it air?
87.
Yeah, it was after Transformers.
Okay.
And watched some of it again when it was on Sci-Fi Channel.
I definitely watched it as a kid, and it's one of those where, like, the hook of the opening theme is forever stuck in my head. But it's one of those where, like, I couldn't really tell you details about it. But I can pick out the figures at a flea market.
Yeah,
but I did watch it as a kid. I just don't remember a whole lot about it, because I didn't watch it much later.
There's a handful of episodes I remember. Mostly one of them for the ending alone, which is ridiculous. But, yeah. This episode I did not remember, though.
When was this on Sci-Fi?
I have never seen this. Never in my life
never.
Have I seen this.
Not even once. Never.
Not once.
Even vaguely aware of it.
I think I remember, like, seeing the figures in, like, an old issue of Toy Fair. But that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. But it turns out it has a very impressive pedigree.
Yes, it does.
All right, David, why don't you tell us about its chief supervising director, Osamu Dezaki.
Yes, Osamu Dezaki, this will be truncated. The first time we did something about him, it's like a movie or something. Whatever. Like, I did a big spiel about him.
Well, we were doing Mighty Orbots.
Well, he was
the last time we talked about him.
He was
Yeah, it was probably the first Mighty Orbots one.
And he was also a creative consultant on Visionaries.
Yes. Okay, so he's come back a bunch of times.
Yeah, he came up in that.
Okay, so in the 60s, the dawn of Japanese animation.
The dawn of time.
Yes. Osamu Tezuka was, like, the Astro Boy guy, and, like, basically, for a while, like, every anime was either from him or a ripoff of him.
Mm.
And one of the people who started working under him on Astro Boy was Osamu Dezaki.
Mm.
Like, first name, no relation at all, just similar names. And at one point, like, they called him Osamu-chan, which annoyed Tezuka. It was like, no, don't call him that. Just he's another Osamu. I don't care.
It's fine. Two people
anyway,
can be named Rob.
Dezaki cut his teeth on Astro Boy and then moved on to Ashita no Joe and Aim for the Ace. That's good. But anyway, a tennis anime, the thing, and other stuff. Like, lots of stuff that did not ever make it to America that he worked on.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the things he worked for America, Bionic 6, Mighty Orbots, and something else.
Well, use it.
Anyway,
I mean, there was definitely a long time when the only stuff that really made it to the U.S. from Japan was sci-fi and sci-fi adjacent stuff.
Well, weirdly, yeah, he
and
was
most of
the
stuff like was like boxing or tennis or various.
But the other,
other
stuff was still things. Being made; it just wasn't being exported to the U.S. Yeah. or imported by the U.S.
Well, notably, he was also the animation director on the old Frosty the Snowman Christmas special.
Oh yes, yes, he did some of those things. He got around a lot in weird things.
Happy birthday!
It's a classic. But,
and Blackjack and a bunch of movies and things. Oh, and I have gas. So this is agitating me. Oh, goody. Anyway, point is, like, he innovated possibly more than anybody else in those early days, like, coming up with postcard memories where, like, animation will stop for a second on a still frame and then convert to, like, a more heavily rendered version of that frame. Mm. Just, like, zoom out a little bit as, like, narration or something. Like, as an impact frame to show, like, emotion, and to save budget. For a few seconds, we're just on this still. Yeah, that's one thing. Like, so many of his innovations were either, like, because he loved, like, film, and he was trying to bring filmic language more into anime, because anime started, like, it was more like, oh, let's just copy the manga. But he was more like, okay, let's do that, but also, let's also bring in, like, zooms and pans and foreground stuff from live-action stuff. And also the cost-cutting maneuvers, like panning over a still frame, like it's multiple panels long, ooh, to save animation. Like, animation shortcuts to cut the budget ended up being really good stylistic things when used at the right time, and he was so good at that. And unfortunately, he died really early at the age of 67 because he was a heavy chain smoker.
Ooh.
That'll do
like,
it.
Like a lot of animators of the era. Like, they worked themselves to death, or they just had bad habits.
Mm.
Or both. But anyway, yes, he was the head supervising director for this. Not that you feel a lot of his imprint on this episode, because there's no postcard memories.
I did feel that this was, like, more nicely animated than a lot of temporary shows.
Yeah, most stuff other than Bionic 6. Bionic, Mighty Orbots looks better. Mm-hmm. Visionary, yeah, this is like Visionaries. Like, it's better animated than you would expect for a boring Saturday morning cartoon.
And
yeah, this was in, like, syndication at the time, so. Yeah.
And this also had a notable Japanese character designer, Nobuteru Yuki.
Wait.
Looks like he was the Escaflowne guy.
Oh, that's cool.
He likes long ski slope noses.
A show that I definitely remember watching because it was on after Beast Wars.
Yes.
And I spent a lot of time wondering, okay, so what is an Escaflowne? I have no idea what's going on here.
You know, an Escaflowne. With the Escaflowne.
We were very into anime at the time, and we weren't really picky about what we were bringing over. We're like, this has got a giant robot in it? Okay.
Ooh. That cartoon with the caveman, like the kid caveman.
Is there a kid
no
caveman
one knows what
on
I'm talking
Escaflowne?
About, but there's going to be one person. No, I mean a different anime.
Wait, was it Crow?
Was it Flint the Time Detective? I think it might have been something like that.
Yes, something like that. I
had a little pterodactyl plush
two
from
time
it.
Time-traveling caveman anime.
Okay, no, I'm just thinking of the cartoon Crow.
Oh, that was a Canadian show, wasn't it?
I'm just thinking of weird anime that came over at the time.
No, I think it was actually like the Children's Television Workshop. Anyway, so Bionic 6, for starters, we're opening off with a theme song that is A, incredibly catchy, and B, seems more like the theme song for like a sitcom.
I mean,
kind
they are a family.
Yeah, it's got, like, 80s sitcom vibes, kind of.
I mean, a lot of your big 80s theme songs are very, like, rockin', like, got a guitar solo in there. We're definitely playing this over...
Upbeat, it might describe what's happening in the show.
Like, there'd be stuff that would be painted on the side of a van.
Mm-hmm.
You're Jason the Wheeled Warriors, your Thundercats... that sort of thing. Whereas this does kind of seem like an escape from TGIF.
Yeah, I could see that. Something coming on after Full House.
We are family. Fight for them. They fight for me.
I mean, like I said,
close as we can be.
It's got a family.
High in the mountain, deep in the sea.
Which is
bionics.
We're all together. We fight for Ryan. Super future family.
A family brought together by faith and given superpowers through the miracle of modern science.
I feel like this is sort of what brings it into sitcom territory.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is about a family.
Like, this could have been like a live action thing that was on after, like, Full House and before Family Matters.
It's something Small Wonder adjacent.
I mean, and
oh, God, I have to dig up an episode of Small Wonder to subject people to at some point. It's not good.
In fact, the opening, they've kind of got the family in, like, the Brady Bunch boxes.
Yeah.
It's the story of a man named Brady who was, I guess, rebuilt into a cyborg.
It's like a Brady Bunch $6 million man crossover.
Well, apparently, Ron Friedman said, the idea was, what if the bionic man marries the bionic woman? They need some other things to be the bionic six. So I give them a bionic pet. I forget what the name of it was. Which was a gorilla, and then two kids. But in fact,
there's four kids.
So
two of which are adopted, clearly.
The concept of this show is so easy to get. Like, you just look at it, it's like, the word's bionic, and you see the dad and the mom, it's like, oh yeah, I know what this is. If you grew up in the 80s anyway, watching reruns.
Yeah.
So you got your mom and your dad. Helen Bennett. He is Bionic One, and she is, unfortunately, Mother One.
Yeah, the code names ain't the greatest.
Even though she can, like, see the fucking future, so I don't know.
Yeah, man, she's, like, clairvoyant.
Yeah, Psychic One or something.
She should have a more impressive code name.
Yeah. I don't know how you get that from Bionics. That seems like a different category of ability.
Yeah, did she have that originally? Was she a precog before the Bionics?
I think it's called the Bionics. And then they've got two like biological kids. You got Eric, aka Sport One.
I never actually remembered. Like, did they make it clear that the two white kids were theirs?
Yeah, the two white kids. So you got Eric, who's Sport One. He's like the jock. And you got Meg, who is Rock One, and she is, like, your hilarious, like, new wave teenager.
Mm-hmm. She's got
always
very,
using, like, hilarious,
like,
future slang.
Boom, boom.
Yeah, she's got a little bit of, like, boom, boom from Marvel kind of vibes, except less of a ruffian, slightly less of a ruffian, but that kind of character.
You got J.D., aka IQ, I guess because he can't be IQ 1, because that means he'd be really stupid.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah, at least he has a more interesting code name.
Yeah, he's super strong, and he's also super smart. And then you got Bungie, who is, unfortunately, Karate 1.
Yeah.
Because he's Japanese.
Yeah.
I don't think Bungie is an authentic Japanese name.
Apparently it's fully Bungiro. Well, I think Bungie.
But it's apparently short. It's apparently short for Bungiro.
Bungie.
Okay. All right. I mean, enough Japanese people worked on this at a high production level that will allow that if it was a problem, they would have pointed it out.
I think I've heard it before, but it is very uncommon. I think.
So apparently they were like a poet or something? So they were already a family, and they were on like a skiing trip in the Himalayas, and then they ended up like trapped under radioactive snow and put into a coma.
Sure.
So they were
hanging out with snake eyes.
Bionis, Yeah. So they were bionicized by Dr. Amadeus Sharp, who is the Dr. Bowtie we see later in this show.
Well, you can tell he's a smart guy because his name is Amadeus.
That's right. And so he's voiced by Alan Oppenheimer, Skeletor himself.
Yay!
Our bionic dad is John Stevenson, Thundercracker / Mr. Slate.
Oh! Yes! I definitely noticed him showing up as, like, some one-line off characters in the episode, so.
Yeah, some of these guys I'm not so familiar with. Sport one is Hal Rail, who was... Oh, huh. He's been in a ton of stuff. He was Snarl and Shrapnel.
He's kind of old for being a kid, but okay.
Well, he was only 30 at the time.
Okay, that's fine.
I don't know. I mean, Frank Welker is pushing 80, and he's still voicing Fred on Scooby-Doo.
That's true.
And Karate One here is Brian Tochi, who is, you may know him as Leonardo in those the live-action Ninja Turtles movies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, his voice was familiar, I guess that's why.
And he was also in Revenge of the Nerds.
Oof.
I mean, maybe that's where I remember him from, too. But I tried to forget that movie.
And of course, they also have a robot gorilla, Fluffy.
Yes.
Who can talk and is voiced by Neil Ross. Who is a couple of aerial bots, I believe.
No, that's Rob Paulson, who's a couple aerial bots. Neil Ross is Springer.
Oh,
that's right.
And, like, a bunch of characters in Inhumanoids and Visionaries.
Oh, right, he's a couple of Constructicons. He was Bonecrusher and Hook. And Shipwreck.
Yes. Man, Shipwreck. Although, that's a great character.
Although, I mostly think of him as Norman Osborn on the 90s Spider-Man.
That's fair. I mostly think of him as Herc Armstrong.
And this is taking place in the somewhat nebulous future.
Yeah, 20X6.
You know, the future.
Yeah, it's 20XX.
Yeah.
And so the episode that we are watching is Fugitive Fluffy.
Rob picked a few, and I was like, that one. Well, the first choice... Well, you listed a few, and I was like, the first episode, what turned out to be the very last episode, and this one.
Yes.
I actually watched half of that, because it was, I didn't pick up that we had changed which one we were doing, and that one was pretty good for the half of it I watched, so if we wanted to revisit Bionic 6 for a Patreon, I would be up for watching the rest of the last episode.
All right, and this one, this first aired May 31st, 1987, and written by Gordon Bresic, a big cartoon guy. Mm-hmm. Pinky and the Brain, Animaniacs, Captain Simian and the Space Monkeys.
Ooh. Oh, man.
Well, wait, we still haven't done Captain Simian, have we?
We have not done Captain Simian and Space Monkeys. Well, no, we have not.
That's going to be a Patreon sometime soon. Maybe not next month, but it's coming up.
Okay.
Pencil it in.
He did, what else? He did, Ninja Turtles, the New Kids on the Block cartoon.
Oh, man.
Ooh, things I've forgotten.
Yo Yogi.
No!
Mighty Max, which we have done.
Yeah.
Yes! That was a good one. Speaking of things that are thankfully preserved by the hard work of sainted people on the Internet Archive. Mighty Max is up there at this point.
Yes. And in fact, his first credit was 1985, The 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo.
Oh, man.
That was the one with Vincent Price.
Yes. But also, unfortunately, Scrappy.
Yeah.
And also, they had like a child con artist.
That little,
Flim Flam, yeah.
Latino kid?
Flim Flam, yes.
Yeah.
I thought maybe he was Himalayan?
What?
Oh, I don't know what he was.
I thought he was, like, Puerto Rican.
Oh, I have no idea.
I haven't seen it forever, so I don't know.
Like, they needed a human Scrappy-Doo, so they brought him
in. That's like one kid sidekick too many.
Yeah, it was definitely... I mean, I liked it because I was, like, six, but it was too many.
It's like we had a Spritel, so now we also need a Chim-Chim, I guess. Wait, was Chim-Chim the monkey or the kid?
Chim-Chim was the monkey.
Okay, so I guess we already had the Chim-Chim, we needed the Spritel.
Yes.
I guess that makes sense. I mean, Chim-Chim is more of a monkey name.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's anyway. Like chimp.
Anyway, so we open, and Bungie, he is working on a charity project, and he's collected a whole bunch of tin cans, like 200 pounds of them, and he's done unspeakable things to get these cans. He's swum through, like, filth.
He's hung out at questionable street corners at all hours of the night looking for these cans.
These cans were encased in human feces.
As someone who lives near state property where drunks throw out their beer cans so they're not caught in the car and have seen horrible shit inside cans like dead mice, I feel like he's bullshitting and just making shit up. Like, no, when you talk about this shit, you shiver. Like, because the cans open just a little bit, and in winter, a mouse wants to find someplace nice to get inside, and then it's so cold and there's snow coming in that they push the trap shut, and then they can't get back out. Or the tab shut. It is not pleasant when you pick up a can with liquid mouse inside. Sorry, listeners, for that mental image.
I would simply leave the can where I found it.
Yes, but you pick it up, it's like, oh, maybe it's just mud because it was in a ditch. It's like, oh no, that's not, that one's going back in the woods.
Let nature have it.
Yep. Speaking of which, I need a new golf cart so I can do that again. Well, new used golf cart.
Oh, I forgot this theme song also has, like, Gary Owen's narration in it in the middle of it for some reason.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. That was very cool. Yeah. I was like, yay.
A family brought together by fate and given superpowers through the miracle of modern science.
I mean, that also feels like more Mighty Orbots kind of stuff.
Oh, yes. Shoot, I should have asked you to look up if there was an episode where the Bionic Man fights Bigfoot. We could have done that episode, but there probably isn't.
Ooh, I didn't see Bigfoot.
I do like
one,
a Yeti.
There really should have been one.
Which is shocking, because everyone knows the $6 Million Man is the natural enemy of
yes,
the Bigfoot.
I think that was like the highest rated understood. Episode, period.
Was that the one where Bigfoot was like Andre the Giant?
Yes, I think so.
Right.
Because they need a really big guy. And
this sounds amazing.
It's a letdown of an episode, but like it's got Andre the Giant as a Yeti, and it's kind of a cool fight scene. But kind of a cool fight scene for the 70s, but that doesn't say a lot.
Yeah.
So Meg is just kind of hanging around and dropping like her hilarious 80s/2080s slang here,
which is
because
ultra impossible gear,
which I feel is like slang that would still work these days.
Ultra gear.
Because it's just saying ultra to everything.
So,
no, these days we're doing the 6-7 and the skibbity and
mogging and gooning and all kinds of nonsense. There's as a guy who kind of likes to follow like how slang evolves, this most recent wave is annoying.
I don't want to hear teenagers talking about gooning. That's not appropriate.
Well, because gooning means like five different things, and it's funny, like, guessing which one. Because you always assume, like, ooh, a henchman. Ooh, boss, we're going to goon.
Oh, look out. Oh, boss, it's the bat.
But, like, there's just a wave of, like, white people
I
making
wish.
Up new stupid. Mogging. I don't know what it is. I don't want to know what it is.
It's not good. It's not good, and it doesn't come from a good place.
No.
Anyway, it turns out that Fluffy, he's can-maxing. He's in his aluminum era. He's just on the couch, chowing down on these cans, and watching his favorite TV show, Psychron the Great, which is, it looks like it's like a fake Voltron.
Yeah, but...
Well, yeah, it's very Voltron-y.
It's Voltron...
Like, kind of vehicle Voltron-y.
Bionic, or, damn it, I keep confusing the two... Mighty Orbots, in that it looks like it's a robot made up of five or six other robots combined together, but we don't see it separate because, as we find out later, it's a guy in a suit because it's Tokusatsu!
Yeah!
Yeah, I thought this was a cartoon.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's what you would assume because you're watching a cartoon and, you know. Anyway, the robot is also imploring.
I assumed it was a cartoon because it was a super robot in America in the 80s, whereas America did not get the live action ones until the 90s, but okay.
Yeah, this is before the Power Rangers happened.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, well, but that was happening in Japan, so it just feels like it's a cultural offset more than being super weird. But maybe in the cartoon universe where they live, the cartoon robots are are done by other cartoon people in suits.
It's the future of this cartoon, which is our present.
Maybe that's it, is it was so forward-thinking that they just assumed that eventually tokusatsu would catch on in America.
Yes.
Well, also, okay, here's the weird thing. When they pick up later, in the middle of the episode, a license plate out of the garbage, like, why is there a license plate in the garbage? The license plate is from Kansai. A place in Japan. Does this show take place in Japan?
But it was an American-shaped license plate.
Does Japan have different shaped license plates?
I don't think so.
Thought they had long ones like Europe, but I guess not.
Is it like in the Canadian territory of Nunavut, where the license plates are shaped like a polar bear?
What?
Is that real?
That is actually true.
Actually, I could be wrong. I thought that they just had long ones like in Europe, but it was yet another case of America just being the weird ones, but I guess not.
It looks like about the same. Admittedly, Kansai wouldn't be written in English on the license plate, but...
Yeah, there is that also.
Yeah, it looks like they're the same size and shape as ours, I think. Oh, and of course I scroll down and I find one that's shaped weird. It's like, what the fuck? Oh, I guess they have decorative license plates, too.
It does feel a little bit like the Donald Glut written episode of GoBots called Destroy All Guardians, where it kind of feels like the writer is just showing off how much they know about much cooler Japanese culture.
Yeah. I wasn't aware that Glut was also a Japanophile, but that makes sense.
It do.
At least the kaiju stuff.
I mean, that's a culture that also appreciates dinosaurs and sexy babes.
Though I'm pretty sure in that episode there's also a... I think it's Dr. Tatsunoko. So, yeah.
Okay, maybe we need to watch that one.
he's...
More things to add
to
the list.
We need to pencil that one in.
We need to watch more Don Clot.
Now that it's on Hulu and you can just... Or not Hulu, now that it's on Tubi, and you can just go and pick an episode off a streaming service.
It's on Peeboo. It's on Ding Dong.
Look it up on Bing Bong.
So Bungie's reading this.
Check out Flim Flam.
This robot gorilla, the Ryan, and he's mad. And this is also where the peg drops Beta Barf City. So he decides that he is going to run away.
Yes. They were mean to the robot monkey, and he's going to run away.
Yes, he's going to run away to the studio where they make Cycron the Great.
Well, because at the end of the episode, there was a big thing about a Cycron charity drive at the TV station.
Yes, the charity drive. That's like, that's how he finds out, because like, Karate One, Bungie... It started about, oh, he's giving the cans to the charity, and then the monkey sees on TV, oh, the charity drive is with my favorite robot. I will go to the robot and ask for how help charity, because I fucked up.
How do I help charity?
But then it turns out that one of our villains is also at the studio, the mechanic.
Oh, with a familiar voice actor.
Yes, this is indeed Frank Welker kind of doing his big dumb guy voice.
Yeah. Yes. Very basic, your classic goon voice.
He's just like a big...
Duh, sure thing, boss.
...muscly guy in overalls and seemingly
not
no
shirt,
shirt and, like, a ball cap, and he's enormous and dumb.
Coveralls that don't quite cover all.
Yeah, he is very much in that cartoon Lenny way.
Yes. This guy definitely wants you to tell him about the rabbits.
Yeah.
And so he really wants to meet his favorite robot, but he is terribly disappointed because we do indeed find out this is like a live-action tokusatsu-type show where it is guys in rubber suits tossing each other around. Except in this case, it's more like, it's like a mech suit.
Yeah, it's a powered armor, because like the guy that comes out of it is half the size of the robot.
Oh, and he's a bit of a nebbish. Oh no.
Yeah.
I'll have your people call my people.
Voice choices. Comedy?
Which is a disappointment. Comes as a disappointment to the mechanic.
Yes, he's so disappointed that he pulls out a nail gun and is like, is he just going to gun this guy?
He pulls out a gun and starts shooting.
Is he just going to gun this guy down? But no, it is a nail gun because he's the mechanic. So he just like nails this guy into his dressing room and then just steals this suit, which he can fit in despite being an enormous guy and this normal actor being like the size of Martin Short.
Well, the mechanic is... he's sort of hunched over like a gorilla and wide.
Yeah, that's the thing.
He's not that much taller than the actor, but he's wide as hell. He's as wide as he is tall.
He's like a cube.
Yes.
He's a brick house.
He built the brick house.
Meanwhile, Fluffy is coming in as well, despite his total inability to fit into any of these doors, and also inability to sort of like ease himself in, like moving a sofa.
Thankfully, the mechanic has already ripped off the backstage door.
Yes.
So he doesn't have to be quiet.
But then he just has like a bunch of boxes fall on him like he's Worf. And they kind of like haul him away because they think he's a prop.
Well, he's a robot animal thingy. Yes, you're at the Tokusatsu studio. You're going to assume the robot gorilla is one of the props.
And then he's eventually found by Cyclone, who's like, oh, hey, it's that robot gorilla that works for the Bionic Six. I bet I could, why don't we, let's do some charity. We'll get some charity from the local banks and jewelry stores.
We'll do some crimes. He's like, hey, this gorilla like, is asking me what to do, so let's do some crimes.
So it's like, bleep, bloop, okay. So now cut to the Casa Bionic, where everybody just bummed because they made the gorilla run away. And they're also consuming vast amounts of soft drinks or beer or, you know, V8 juice. You've got cans everywhere.
Yeah, don't need to drink that much stuff out of cans. But there are no labels on them. I mean, there's labels, but not legible ones.
I mean, admittedly, we do have like two adults and like four teenagers. And also, they're like bionic, so I don't know. This could be like, you know, coolant or something. I don't know.
That's a good point.
I assume they're drinking like they're having like regular food and drink. Did you guys ever watch like the Bionic or the $6 Million Man?
Not recently.
I assume they're just like eating normally and not like, just chugging down cans of Pennzoil or whatever.
No, they're still people. They just have some eyes or arms or legs that are not. They spent millions of dollars in the 60s and 70s to make robot people, and wow, that should not work.
I mean, listen, they're clearly advanced. Sometimes things get really slow and they make that sort of ch-ch-ch-ch noise.
A noise that, well, actually, maybe it's not used anymore, but it was a punchline for a while.
Oh, sure. So, yeah, now we cut to Cat's a Bad Guy, and we meet our villains. Dr. Scarab.
Oh, like, man, this guy.
We really loved an underwater bad guy base in the 80s, didn't we?
Yes, yeah. Big fans of underwater villain bases.
I mean, there was the Decepticons. I think the Terrordrome was underwater at some point.
Yeah, well, first you have your Bond villain bases, and then that moves to a volcano base that's always going to explode, and after that you progress underwater. There's so much room to hide it.
It's true.
And maybe you can make a mobile.
Yeah. And then you can sell like a toy submarine.
Yeah. Everybody loves a submarine.
So this is Dr. Scarab, who is really, like, apparently he's like an actual medical doctor because he's got like the head mirror.
Yeah, and the white coat. Well, white vest.
What he seems like to me is like a cross between Dr. Hiss from Bots Master. Mm-hmm. If you remember that guy.
Of course.
Like the villain doctor guy from Bots Master and Baron Harkonnen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Definitely with the... I mean, he's definitely less grotesque than Baron Harkonnen.
Yeah. But he's got the whole evil doctor thing going, but he's also got a floating chair and is very large and has distressingly red lips.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, Dr. Mindbender in there somewhere.
Maybe, maybe.
Yeah, his character design's kind of weird.
And voiced by Jim McGeorge, who we recently heard as Bort on The Mighty Orbots.
Oh,
he sounds really Ed Asner-y, though.
He is doing, like, an Ed Asner thing here.
Like, I genuinely thought it was Ed Asner.
And he's got a whole bunch of bionic guys who we don't see in this episode. There's, like...
Except we see a second
except
one.
For the Glove, who is...
welcome back to the show, Frank Welker again.
Yeah, we're voice actor budget's a little low this week. We're just hiring Welker for two guys.
Yep.
This guy is...
Why is he Rogue Trooper?
He is 100% just Rogue Trooper. From, what is it, 2000 AD?
Which is a thing I never noticed because,
yes,
like,
if...
I've seen pictures of Rogue Trooper before, but never at the same time I was thinking about Bionic 6 to put it together.
Yeah, if you are at all familiar with the 2000 AD character Rogue Trooper, this guy is literally just a purple guy with no shirt and military pants and a military helmet. I'm like, why is Rogue Trooper in this?
Yeah, he's a different shade of purple. Like, Rogue Trooper is more of a blueberry purple.
I mean, that's going to vary depending on your colorist, so. But yeah. It's...
And this guy's whole deal is that he's got, like, a special glove. There is no other like it. He's got, like, a whole bunch of stuff that zaps out of it.
Yeah.
And also, he's using, like, stock Welker bad guy voice number 3, the guy who's, like, kind of smart, but not the smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's the Starscream-ish of this series.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely heard Welker use this voice before. I can't place where.
Yeah.
It's definitely kind of the sing voice he's dubbing over George C. Scott with in The Rescuers Down Under.
Ha. Huh. He needs to be, like, deeper and gruffer if he's going to go around looking like Rogue Trooper, but okay.
Yes. Or possibly British.
Possibly British.
So he's like, you know, where is the mechanic? None of our stuff is fixed. Because apparently the mechanic is literally the mechanic.
Yes.
For these bad guys.
It's his job. They just don't bother knowing his name.
And also, how is this guy Dr. Scarab, and he is in no way either Beetle or Egyptian-themed?
He's not.
His symbol is a scarab that he wears on a chest and makes all his henchmen wear.
Right.
That's boring.
A green scarab, but that's it.
It's right. Insufficiently scaraby.
And reading the wiki, I just realized, which is something I forgot, because apparently it never comes up, he's the brother of the good guy scientist.
Yes.
So it's, like, even crazier than, like, Dr. Light and Dr. Wily nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Wait, are they brothers?
No, they're not. Oh. I'm just saying, it is crazier than that.
Oh, okay.
They were just research assistants together, not brothers. At least, as far as I know, I don't think they've ever been brothers.
Okay. I mean, I'm not up on my Mega Man lore, so it's that could be, you could have just told me that they were brothers. I would have believed it.
I mean...
Well, no, they didn't have to be brothers because it's copying Astro Boy. And they were not the good guy and the bad guy, or Dr. Wright? No. Who's the good guy? I can't remember.
And there's the two scientist brothers in Gal Gaigar, but the, quote, evil one of those is really just American.
Yes.
He's not evil, he just has his own set of priorities and intentions because he's American.
Hmm. So he sends out Glove to find out what's going on here, and we cut back to our bionic pals, and they're talking with the man who created them, Dr. Bowtie, and he's you need to follow the ozone trail to find him, because it turns out he's also engaged in, like, a crime spree across the city.
Yeah, you might want to go pick him up.
Yes. Yeah, so cut to this, like, gala dinner. Like, this is a very accurately boring, like, dinner honoring some, like, local business leader.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because, like, the crime is, like, they were going to steal money to buy puppies because Mechanic wanted puppies.
Yes.
And they find the license plate while they're rummaging around for ideas.
He says something at the beginning of their crime spree about needing to find puppies with charity needs. Like, okay, buddy.
Yeah. Okay, and if I had a nickel for every time a mechanical gorilla was involved in a theft, I'd have more than one, but I'm not exactly sure how many I'd have. I know it's happened at least once in Tokusatsu that I've seen.
I thought you were going to say it happened on Beast Wars.
I was thinking Hanna-Barbera.
I mean, it probably has happened there too. It's weird that it's such a recurring thing. It's like bank robbery, robot gorilla.
They go together.
Or monster gorilla.
I mean, what this had me think of was the Filmation Ghostbusters.
Yeah, that also has a gorilla.
Seen all of in recent years. No, they did not have Tracy the gorilla steal from a bank in that show because they only had two fucking sets. No, three counting the graveyard. They had the office, they had a castle, and they had the graveyard. That was it every episode. Oh my god. Jesus Christ, that is crazy.
I was thinking about the cartoon.
Oh, I don't remember the cartoon. Weird shit, it might have happened there.
I've only seen the cartoon. I've never seen the live action show. And I was
until a few years ago, I'd never seen the live action one, other than clips.
I was a sufficiently slow witted kid that I thought it and the real Ghostbusters were like the same show.
Oh, and originally saw it, I think I might have thought they were related, but then it became clear they were not.
Even aware of the Filmation one until I was old enough to like be aware of the animation industry and heard something about it. Like, I don't think it ever came up on anything I watched.
Yeah, see, so there were some of those real Ghostbusters that were like the guys from the movie, and there were some that were like Slimer hanging out with kids.
Yeah, well, yeah, that too. Actually, did I see much of... I'm not sure I saw it by the time I could be in Slimer and the kids.
And then, so I thought there was just like a third group of episodes that were just like these two guys and their gorilla.
You know, normal stuff.
Because, I mean, they're all Ghostbusters. It must be the same show.
I'm sure there's got to be an episode of Megilla Gorilla where he's convinced to rob a bank.
Yeah, it just keeps happening.
Possibly also Grape Ape.
Oh, definitely Grape Ape.
Anyway, Fluffy does have a great line here where he's like, my sensors detect this is boring.
I like when they rob the charity event, the mechanic gives him this big, like, comical large brown sack and calls it the charity sack, the official charity sack.
That's right, the charity sack.
Yes, put the money in a charity sack and no one gets hurt.
Because the mechanic is stupid, but he's also smarter than a robot gorilla.
Yes.
Yes.
So the Bionic Six show up. Fluffy's a little torn here, but then soon they're just all abducted by Dr. Scarab and brought back, and he is blasted with an evil ray.
And they switch a floppy disk in his head and hit the good to evil switch.
Oh, here's your problem, Pally. This one's set to evil.
Yes.
So, you know, the Bionic family is trying to track down this gorilla, and so they finally confront him. They're not aware that he's been switched to evil, and I like that Mother One has a premonition of her son totally getting punched by this robot gorilla.
Yep.
Also, and I would like to point out that what they show up in is a Concorde.
Yep.
Fly into here in a Concorde, which seems like an extremely poor choice for something that might be involved in any kind of combat situation or require maneuverability. Like, I realize Concords were cool. Like, I, of all people, understand that Concords were very cool back then.
Yeah, Jen, I was about to say.
Yeah, it's... But it's like half Concorde. Like, the nose bends down, but, like, the back end is... Oh, there was a bomber. Like it because it has swept wings a bit. It's slightly
unless it can turn into a robot, it has no business being here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like if you took a Concorde and like put it in charge of like a group of the of like four fighter jets.
Look, he's an outsider.
And also those four fighter jets were mostly idiots.
Idiots and assholes of varying levels. Yeah, yeah. I mean, at least he can turn into a robot, though, so he doesn't just crash land and crumple. I mean, they didn't show it crumpling. It held up perfectly fine, but...
Well, and also, one of them hadn't crashed yet at this point in, like, history.
Yes. Still.
Except in, Concorde, in, like, Airport 79, the Concorde.
Oh, man.
It was the last of the Airport movies.
I should watch that. I love that stuff.
I mean, the first Airport is kind of like a real movie, mm-hmm. and then the subsequent ones are kind of very disaster. Like, there's one where you'll be laughing every other scene because you just see where they lifted from it for Airplane.
Yeah. Oh, right there it is.
But anyway, she has a premonition of her son getting punched by this gorilla and is powerless to stop her son from getting punched by this gorilla. And, like, everybody's trying to stop this gorilla, and it's not working. And...
They're doing this in a junkyard. They have crashed into a junkyard, so of course yes. there has to be a moment with a car crusher.
Yes.
A junkyard with many things, including a space shuttle.
Yes.
Well, it's the future.
Sitting in the junkyard.
Well, it's the future. You know, we're just tossing those things away.
We don't need them.
And I guess they have, like, a regular form and a bionic form, and they have, like, secret identities...
Yeah, secret identities, it sort of makes sense. The fact that the bad guys don't identify them by their secret identities, when all they do is change clothes, they don't wear masks or anything, is kind of stupid.
Yeah, that's
no,
silly.
Because Bungie goes back into the ship, he changes back into his civilian form, and then he runs back out. And
no, he runs into the space shuttle that's there!
Yes.
Not their own ship, he runs into the derelict space shuttle.
Right, and then the bad guys are all, wait, who the hell is that?
Yeah, why is this kid here?
Like, he's got a different shirt on, guys. Come on. Are you all face blind?
Maybe. Maybe they just think all Asians look alike.
Oh, no.
Maybe they're just racist.
I don't know. There's like a Korean guy or something. I don't know. And guess what? He's got a big pile of cans and... And evil can be defeated with the power of this gorilla's insatiable hunger for garbage.
They give him a treat, and that sets him back to good.
And so Glove is there, and he's like, well, time to murder this random child then. So he just hucks him into this garbage compactor.
Yes, you gotta have a...
Knocks him out,
throws
him in the compactor.
You have to have a car crusher. If it takes place in a junkyard, you've got to have a car crusher.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, this guy's gonna be crushed into a meaty paste. My job is done.
Guess I can leave.
But of course, the gorilla is now heroic instead of evil, and Glove is gonna land the critical blow here, but then his glove shorts out, and that's like his only thing, so he has to run away. And then it turns out that back at the base, the mechanic... fixed his glove, and also fixed this guy's chair, and neither of them worked. LOL.
Apparently he's not actually good at being a mechanic, even though that's literally his only job.
No. And then,
he's
of
better
course,
than everybody else there, but...
And then, of course, all is well with the Bionic Fam. And that is the end of the episode.
Yep, that's it. The day is saved.
Given the wholesome nature of this show, I'm a little surprised we didn't get a... You know, what, you know, you can't believe everything you see on TV.
Yeah, a lesson thing teaser.
But then I think that had been sort of phased, that was being phased out because He-Man had it.
Mm-hmm.
And G.I. Joe famously had it, but then Transformers, which came along a little later, didn't have it.
Yeah, they did draft them, but... There are, actually, yeah.
Right, I mean, they exist, they made them.
They were going to make them.
But they never aired them, so I wonder
if... But then I think Jem had them.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think you're right. So I wonder if there was, like, some sort of, like, Reagan-era like loosening of rules.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and it
may they no longer had to have that moral component.
Maybe they didn't have to have it, but some of them still liked to, like the gem ones.
This is possible.
Or like,
yes,
you had to have a degree. Okay, half of your programming has to have these, so Joe gets it, but Transformers doesn't need it or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think I found what I was looking for.
You know what would be amazing? This gem had them, and that was at the same time as Inhumanoids. If Inhumanoids had them, it would be amazing. I mean, the gem ones just could have been like Christy Marks was like, we should have these. This is actually a good idea. So.
We had a lot of fun trying to kill Gem in the Holograms today. But you know what's not fun? Recording songs off the radio. That's bootlegging, and you could go to jail. Make sure to buy your tapes and records from your friendly neighborhood a music retailer. Well, now you know, and knowing is half the battle.
The Misfits.
Don't try to do murders, kids. I like that one of the Transformers ones they were going to have was Don't Commit Grand Theft Auto, because like there was literally an episode that was about someone trying to commit Grand Theft Auto.
Also, you should become a professional breakdancer. You're never going to make your money. I know it's 1986 and you've seen it in the movies, but that's not really how things work.
No.
There will be no Olympic boogaloo for you, Rocksteady.
It is in the Olympics now, though.
That's true. And it turns out that the best way to become the most famous breakdancer in the world is to be the worst breakdancer in the world.
Yes.
Shout out to my girl, Ray Gunn.
So is there something you found, David, that you need to share with the class?
No, I think the plane there... they're flying is like half Concorde, half B-1 Lancer.
I mean, I guess I can't talk A because I do have strong positive feelings about another Concorde, but also because I have strong positive feelings about a team that uses a variation on the SR-71, which is also not a suitable. I mean, at least it's military though. Whereas the Concorde is just like a commercial passenger vehicle that you should not be using for military purposes.
But it gets there fast.
Yeah, but then if you crash it, now you have to build a whole new one.
Yeah.
So this was, you know, this was a pretty fun show. It's extremely 80s. But the animation is nice. The character designs are a lot nicer than a lot of its contemporaries.
Yeah. I mean it does look really good. It's TMS. It's
bordering on anime. It's not quite.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, this is also TMS.
I mean I brought up Visionaries before for comparison, which was also TMS. So, yeah, it's TMS, so they're doing good work. Like I said, I watched half of the last episode that's got the whole cartoon riff on it, and that looked a lot of fun. So we may have to, if we come back to it, we should do that one.
Yeah. Or we'll do the episode that I remember most, the one I caught multiple times, so it's stuck in my head. And I love the end, like, it involves a time travel gun or some nonsense that brings past and future versions of Dr. Scarab, and they all try to work together, but because they're all Dr. Scarab, they're fighting against each other. It's amazing. If only for, like, the line at the end, like, the current Scarab wants to kill the old one or something because he's fucking shit up, and then the kid version is like, well, I'll just kill both of you. It's like, but it's like killing yourself. It's like, I'll just grow up to be somebody else.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck, man.
Show you.
That's crazy, but genius.
So yeah, that was, like I said, So David, when was it on Sci-Fi Channel?
Sometime in the 90s?
Okay. I mean, I was somewhat limited.
I think it might have been early.
Because I was recording Robotech and Transformers off Sci-Fi Cartoon Quest in the mornings when I was in school. But I was somewhat limited by the availability of VHS tape resources, so I may not have extended to also recording Bionic 6. They were showing a lot of marionette stuff at the time, too.
Yeah, Sci-Fi Channel, sometime in the mid-90s, the internet is telling me. Because the version on Archive has the Sci-Fi Channel planet.
Mm. I saw that. So I wonder if it was, like, after they stopped having G1. Maybe they moved to Bionic 6.
They ran out of other stuff. It's like, yeah, that'll do. That's sci-fi.
That's good enough. I mean, it is good enough.
We've run the Bionic Man on this channel. Let's have the cartoon version.
Yeah.
That isn't officially the cartoon version.
I just didn't remember that being part of Sci-Fi Cartoon Quest back when I was recording G1, but it's probably just a year or two after that. So yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you again for tuning in to Stasis Pod. We'll be back next week. We're heading back to school for Rescue Bots Academy.
Yay! We have one more season to be spared before I have to deal with the thing that I really hate in Cyberverse Season 3.
Uh-oh. Oh, no. What could it be?
But, yeah, that'll be... I'm looking forward to some more time with the kids.
Of course, until then, we are all over the air. We are on Mastodon. We are on Blue Sky. And we have a Patreon.
Yes, we are hosted on IaconUnderground.net, where we have a Patreon set up to help with hosting and other expenses. That is patreon.com/IaconUnderground. And for as little as a dollar a month, you get access to our special monthly episodes where we do random special things that seem like a cool thing at the time. This month, to tie in with Disney Plus's Wonder Man series, which was excellent, unless you only want superhero stories where punching happens, in which case it is maybe a little less excellent, but it's still good. We are watching the episode of Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes that has our buddy Simon Williams in it. So that is actually Rob for once did offer up a good Marvel show, which is a rare and exciting thing, with one caveat, and I will leave that for the episode. There's one thing about it that still caused psychic damage. But yeah, those we do every month. A lot of times we'll do something that ties in with a big thing. Sometimes we do something that is the big thing. And then sometimes when there's no obvious choice, we've got a running list of fun things we've been meaning to get to. So yeah, that is patreon.com/IaconUnderground.
All right. So until next time. I'm Rob.
I'm Jen.
And I'm David.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Bye.